chapter number 27. Acts chapter number 27 in your Bible. Actually, what I want to look at is in Acts chapter number 28. We're going to tell the story in Acts chapter 27 to lead up to chapter number 28. And we're going to just tell you kind of a great story because it involves two things that I like, water and a shipwreck. Oh boy, that's my two favorite things. A storm on the water. That's a great thing, isn't it? And some of us are a little bit crazy. I was telling the kids that the other day I was on a school bus and I got to the school where I had to pick up kids, and they said, "There's a storm coming." They said, "There's a tornado that's heading our way. You got to get out of the bus and come into school." And I said, "Can I just stay out here and watch the show? I don't know what you're all worried about." And there are some other folks that were saying the same thing. But then when the sirens started going off, some of the people that were saying the same thing, "Oh, my babies are at home. I hope they're in the basement." Can I go outside and watch this thing? This sounds like a good one. And it didn't even do anything. But we got some rain is all. But anyway, I like a good storm. And when the sirens go out, that's a sign for some people to go to the basement. That's a sign for me to go on the rooftop and watch. Get the lawn chairs out. Pop some popcorn. We're having a time. And except when the rain comes, that messes things up. But anyways, I like a good storm. Acts chapter number 27. I'm going to just tell you the story because we're going to look at something in chapter number 28. But we need to go through chapter 27 to get to it, all right? Paul was on a ship going to Rome. He was arrested for preaching the gospel. He wasn't arrested for standing against the wicked Roman government, though the Roman government was far more wicked than we can ever imagine in America. He wasn't arrested for the practice of sodomy, though it was a common practice for kings and common citizens to have their harem of sodomites that they traveled with, abusing little children and everything else, having sodomite slaves. He wasn't protesting that, but he was preaching the gospel, and he was arrested for that. And he was taken prisoner, and he appealed to Caesar to avoid a instant death penalty by an angry mob. So he was put on a ship as a prisoner and to sail to Rome. And he always had a desire to see Rome, but maybe not on a prison ship, which would not be a very pleasant cruise. But they sailed, first of all, to the island of Crete. If I were to show you a map, and you maybe have a map in the back of your Bible somewhere, that's about 500 miles by way across the Mediterranean Sea. That's about the halfway point between Jerusalem and Rome in Italy, where he was headed. And the ship was docked there to take on supplies and to change over some things and to get ready for the rest of the voyage. And by the time they were ready to go again, it was not safe to travel because it was storm season. If you're around seas very often, you know that there are certain times of year that there's storms that could pop up any time. For example, this is the time of year that's hurricane season. We just had a hurricane not too long ago. A few years ago, I went down to help clean up after a hurricane. My only regret is I didn't get to get down there before the hurricane hit. I wanted to be there, especially when it was a good one. My sister was hiding out, and she heard it get real quiet all of a sudden. And I said, "And you didn't even go outside to look up in the sky when you're in the eye of the hurricane? Man, what a wimpy." I would have been there with the camera and ready to see it. And then everything picked up again, and it started blowing the opposite direction. And I got to go down there and help cut some trees down. And she thought I was crazy just doing that. But anyways, it was storm season. It wasn't safe to travel by sea at that time. And then verse number 10 in chapter number 27, as the captain decided it's time to go, the one in charge of the prisoner decided, "Sir," he said, "Sirs," Paul said, "I perceive this voyage will be a great harm with much damage, not only to the lading of the ship, but also to our lives." This is a bad time, guys. This is a bad decision. And I'm sure the captain and the sailors looked at him and said, "What do you know? You're just the preacher." By the way, it'd be good to learn to listen to the preacher. He might know some things that you don't know about. But they said, you don't know anything. You're the preacher. And sure enough, they decided, well, we're going to leave. Besides, we don't want to stay here for the winter. We want to get on our way to Rome. Verse number 13 tells how they had smooth sailing to start out. See, that preacher didn't know what he was talking about. By the way, they had another 500 or 600 miles to go across the sea, the rest of the Mediterranean Sea, before they got to Rome on their voyage. And everything was going great until Euroclydon showed up. Watch out for Euroclydon. You don't want to show up. That's not a dinosaur. That's a storm. The word itself means a strong east wind. It's probably what they call the hurricane. I've never been in Euroclydon, I don't think. I've been in I don't know what a west wind would be called. I've been in some of those. But Euroclydon showed up in verse number 14. They feared they would run ashore, so they set sail. The water was getting shallow. They thought, we're going to run into a sandbar here pretty soon, so we better hoist the sail and take off into the storm. If you read about these storms, that the hurricane that just came, one of the safest places for some of the ships when the hurricane was coming to shore just a week or so ago on the East Coast, a lot of the ships, they loaded them up and sent them out to sea. Because sitting on the coast and sitting next to the docks and everything, they would get destroyed or washed up on shore. So the best thing is just head out into the storm. And that's what they thought. The best thing we could do is just face this thing head on. Just go out into the storm and see what happens. So they set sail. And after the storm got bad, they thought, well, we got to get rid of some stuff before we sink. So they started to unload everything. They started to throw everything overboard to lighten their load so they would make it through the storm a little bit better, so they would stay afloat. And for many days, the Bible says, they saw no sun or stars at night. In other words, they didn't have GPS. They didn't have any way of knowing where they were. They had absolutely no idea where this storm had taken them. They had no sense of direction. They couldn't see anything but the darkness and the clouds and the lightning and the waves. And they were tossed for many days on the sea. And then in verse number 21 through 25, Paul gave them, he stood up in the midst of them. He stood forth in the midst of them. And I like this. In verse number 21, he said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened to me. You should have listened to me. I told you so." Well, he didn't say it exactly that way. But he said, "You should have listened to me." But they knew more than the preacher. They didn't need to listen to him. But he said, "God spoke to me tonight. And he gave me some good news. And by the way, I believe God. When he tells me something, I believe it. You may not believe it, but I believe it." He said that we're going to lose the ship, but we're all going to survive if you listen to me. By now, I think they maybe had learned, maybe we ought to listen to this preacher. So they said, okay, sounds good. So they set out on their way again. The storm had been going on. And now they measured the depth of the water and found out it's not hardly deep enough for a ship. And it's getting shallower. And it's a rock bottom. We're going to bottom out here pretty quick. And some of the seasoned sailors that have been in storms before or knew when they got shallow water, they're going to hit a rock and that ship is just going to bust to smithereens. So some of them were preparing to go overboard. And Paul said, wait a minute, hold it. If any of these men jump overboard, they're going to lose their life. The only way you're going to survive is to stay on the ship. Well, they made the mistake once of not listening to the preacher. Now they're going to listen to him. And they decided, okay, we'll stay on the ship. The water was getting shallower and shallower. Paul said, you know, before we hit land here, it's been 14 days since we ate anything. Not 14 minutes, 14 days. I'm looking at these guys over here. Jacob, do you happen to have a Subway in your pocket? He disappeared for a while in the campout. I said, so did you have a foot long or a 6-incher? And he said, maybe. I think he had both, is what I think. And they went 14 days with no food, nothing to eat. And Paul said, you know what? Let's have one last meal, and then we're going to throw all the leftovers overboard. Throw all the flour, all the meat, everything we have is going overboard as soon as we finish this meal. So sure enough, they did it, and then they ran the boat ashore. They just let, here's a great verse for teenagers. I won't show you the verse. You'll have to read the chapter to find it. They let her drive. A few verses later, it says, all hope that we would be saved was then lost. Don't let her drive is the moral of the story. In other words, they didn't let the wind take the boat, and the front of the boat stuck into shore, and the waves came and hit the boat and broke it literally in half. Some of them got to shore on by surfing. They grabbed a surfboard and went to shore, just like a cartoon. They made it. Now some of the soldiers, this is important, some of the soldiers said, you know what normally should be done here? We've got prisoners on this ship. The first thing we should do is execute the prisoners to make sure none of them escape. But Paul had, by this time, had made a friend of his guard. And his guard, wanting to save Paul's life, said, let's make an exception to that rule this time. This guy's become my friend. We've been on the ship. I've learned to listen to him. Maybe Paul's witness to him. Paul definitely showed him some kindness. And Paul's life was spared because of the friendship that he had made with a man that could care less whether Paul lived or died. But Paul had made a great friend out of him. Such a good friend that the man was willing to risk his own reputation, his own character, his own job, maybe even his own life, to spare the life of all the prisoners. And we get to verse number 44, the end, last verse of chapter number 27. And it says, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of ship. And so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. Now we get to chapter number 28. This is what I want to look at tonight. Chapter number 28, beginning in verse number 1. And we're going to read down for a little bit just because I like this story. By the way, the Bible is an exciting book. If you read the Bible, it's better than anything else you'll ever read. Not only is it exciting, it's true. And there's great applications in it. Verse number 1 of chapter number 28. And when they were escaped, then they knew that this was an island that was called Mileta. Now, if you were to look on a map, again, if you follow this in your Bible, in a Bible app, if you see Italy, it looks like a boot or whatever, and it's got a little heel, and right down south of Italy is this little, there's a couple of big islands, there's a little tiny island called Mileta. I looked it up on a modern map, I forget what the name is, it still kind of sounds like Mileta, but it's a little bit different in the modern language. And notice verse number 2, and the barbarous people showed no little kindness, for they kindled a fire and received us, everyone, because of the present rain and because of the cold. And when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened onto his hand. That reminds me of a picture that I have of my wife in my mind, where that venomous beast grabbed a hold of her ear as she tried to fling it. But that's another story for another time. Most of you have heard that. That's the best earring I ever saw my wife wear. But it only stayed on for a second. And when the barbarous people saw the venomous beast hang on his hand, they said among themselves, no doubt this man is a murderer, whom though he hath escaped the sea, yet vengeance suffereth not to live. And he shook off the beast into the fire and felt no harm. Howbeit they looked on when he should have swollen or fallen down dead suddenly. But after they had looked a great while and saw no harm came on him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god. In the same quarters there were possessions of a chief man of the island whose name was Publius, who received us and lodged us 3 days courteously. That's a great word, isn't it? Received 3 days courteously. And it came to pass that the father of Publius lay sick of the fever and a bloody flux, to whom Paul entered in and prayed and laid hands on him and healed him. So when this was done, the others also which had diseases in the islands came and were healed, who also honored us with many honors. And when we departed, they laid at us with such things as were necessary. And after 3 months, we departed into a ship of Alexandria, which was wintered in the isle, whose sign was Castor and Pollux. The name of Castor and Pollux. Now, I want you to notice especially one phrase in verse number 2. And it's kind of a long title, but I'm going to use this for the title of my We don't have much farther to go here tonight for my message tonight. Verse number 2 says, "The barbarous people showed us no little kindness." The barbarous people showed us no little kindness. In other words, they were very generous. They were very kind. And I read down to verse number 11 or 12 or so because I wanted you to see what these barbarous people did for the Apostle Paul and for these strangers, these Roman soldiers and strangers that were traveling and were shipwrecked. I was thinking of another phrase I heard someone preach on recently. I thought I'm going to use this for a message sometime, but I'm just going to mention it in Luke chapter number 16 and verse number 8. In Luke 16, there's a parable told of the unjust steward. And there's a statement that Jesus made in that parable that kind of goes along with this, so we're not going to go to that parable right now. He said, "The children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light." That's an amazing statement. I heard somebody preach an outstanding message on that sometime. I might borrow it and use it sometime. But we can learn something from the lost people of our world. These barbarous people. What does the word barbarous mean? Sounds like somebody who cuts hair, doesn't it? A barbarous. What are the barbarous people? The barbarians. The word barbarian, as it's used in the Bible, literally means a foreigner. Someone from that's not from around here. Someone from a foreign land. Someone who not only doesn't live here, but they live in a foreign... Of course, they're in a foreign country now. They're in a barbarous country. And these barbarous people, these foreigners, they're strangers to our customs. They're strangers to our teaching. They're strangers to our language. They're strangers to our culture. They don't know anything about us. They don't know anything about our God. They don't know anything about who we are or why we came here. For all they know, we came here to destroy them. For all they know, we came here to rob them of everything that they have. But these barbarous people, these heathen people that know nothing about our God, the Bible says they showed us no little kindness. They were kind and gracious and compassionate towards us. The first thing they did is took us in and took our wet clothes off and put warm clothes on us and built a fire to warm us up and put us under shelter to protect us from the rain. They made sure we've been a long time without food. They got some food together. They fed us. They took care of us. They were kind and gracious from us. They rescued us from the sea. No doubt they probably saw these people coming in on boards and boats and risked their own lives to go out into the storm and pull some of them in. Maybe they took their little rowboats out there and tried to rescue some of these people and drug them all in so no one was lost in the storm. They gave them food and shelter. They kept them alive literally for 3 months. They befriended them. They built friendships and relationships. We're told about the chief man in the island whose father got sick, and Paul prayed for him and God healed him because of the friendship that Paul had formed with this man. And when that was time to leave, after 3 months of caring for them, feeding for them. Now keep in mind, these people came with nothing. They were literally boat people. They weren't even boat people. They were floating in on sticks and boards, whatever they could find. They were stick people is what they were. They were strangers. They came in with nothing. They had nothing to offer them. There's no reason that they would show them. But, and then these barbarian people. That almost sounds scary, doesn't it? These strangers that know nothing about us, nothing about our God, could care less about our life, and yet they showed us great kindness. What an amazing text that is. And then when it was time to leave, after they fed us and clothed us and sheltered us for 3 months, after the winter was over and now it was safe to sail, they found another ship that was in the area that was going the same direction. I don't know who paid the fare. These guys didn't have any money left. Somebody paid for their fare to get on that boat and to make the rest of their journey. They showed them no little kindness. And of course, when they saw the events when Paul was bitten by this snake, they said, well, surely this man's a wicked man that deserves to die. But then they saw that he shook that venomous beast off. And any snake is a venomous beast as far as I don't care if it's a garter snake. It's a venomous beast. Huh? The only good snake is a cube snake. When you chop it up in little cubes. That's the only kind of snake that I like. They saw him wasn't affected by this snake bite. And they said, boy, he must be a god. And they honored him. And they wanted to worship him. Paul said, I'm not a god. I'm just a man like you. And I could just hear the conversation or picture the conversation that ensued. But for 3 months, they took care of him. They honored them when it was time to leave. They gave them everything that they needed on their journey. It says in the last verses that we read, verse 10 through 11, that they gave them everything that they need. Now, I want to give you some things to think about with this story. I got bullets, but they're not bullets. They look more like checker squares or something. I'm not sure what they are. 4 checker square points, all right, I'm going to give you. And the first one is this. Even barbarians can teach us how to be kind. Did you catch that? Even barbarians that know nothing about our God, that know nothing about us, that we'd just soon be dead as far as they're concerned, they can teach us how to be kind. Secondly, Christians ought to be kind to everyone. Did you catch that? Christian, we talked about that with the kids this weekend. Be ye kind one to another. Christians ought to be the kindest people you'd ever meet. In other words, brothers and sisters ought not to fight with each other. I grew up in a home where brothers and sisters fought with each other. And when I got saved and we started a home, it ain't going to happen here. It doesn't have to happen. And I hear people say it all the time. Well, that's the way brothers and sisters are supposed to be. Well, that's maybe what the world says. But I know some pagans that even know better than that. Young people ought not to fuss and fight with each other. They'd be kind to each other. Even the barbarians knew enough to be kind. They knew nothing about God. And by the way, there's a lot of things that those barbarians need to know, but one thing they did know already is we ought to be kind to strangers. We ought to take them in. We ought to feed them, clothe them, make sure that they're protected, make sure that they're cared for, even take care of them for a number of months until it's time for go. They showed them no little kindness. In other words, they showed them a great deal, undeserved kindness. They were gracious to them. Even the barbarians can teach us how to be kind. Christians ought to be the kindest people. And I just give you maybe a little testimony. It was the kindness in Christians that attracted me to Christ. Did you catch that? It was the kindness of Christians that attracted me to Christ. And by the way, the other side of that's true too. The unkindness that I saw in Christians after I got saved almost pushed me away from Christ. That almost got me completely out of church within the first 2 months of my salvation. Christians ought to be the kindest people. I remember, when I was a kid, I was somebody who knew me when... my wife and I started dating. I still can't say the word courting. We were dating. Shortly after I got saved, it's kind of like working out. I can't say I work out. I exercise, okay? Richard Simmons works out. I exercise, all right? I just can't say that word when it applies to me, okay? the Beverly Hillbillies court. We dated, okay? Those are just some word pictures that I have that I can't erase from my mind. I don't know what it is about that. But we dated, and I remember... being that we grew up almost neighbors, In fact, when I was born, her family was the closest neighbors we had. They lived about a half mile away from us, and I didn't know her. When she was born, they moved farther away. They had to get out of the neighborhood after I came on the scene. we grew up almost neighbors. We're in a different school, and we never knew each other until we got saved and got in church and found out that we had a lot of mutual friends. And one of the mutual friends to her family and my family was one of my bus drivers. They're going to give you an evil report. That's one of God's judgments on me. I'm a bus driver today. I was the kind of kid that when I got on the bus, if the bus driver told me good morning, I said, "She said good morning to me. What a jerk." That's the kind of kid I was. Huh? I didn't care about anybody. All I cared about was myself. I was an American. I don't care about anybody. I was the most unkind, the most gracious person. Well, this particular bus driver, I went to school with her son, and he and I were buddies. I've even been to her house, and I kind of liked him, but she still pinned it pretty accurately before I was saved. He said, "Who you dating?" And they said my name, and the first words out of her mouth were, "That brat." She pinned it pretty well. She pegged me pretty well. That's what I was when God saved me. What I'm telling you is I had to learn to be kind. That's not natural for many people. I didn't grow up in a house where we tried to act civil. I was wondered why it was that we never got invited to many people's houses when we were kids. Now I look back and I can understand a little bit, we didn't leave. There were no stones attached by the time we left the house normally, it wasn't quite that bad, but it seemed that way sometimes. I didn't know what it was to be kind, but the kindness of Christians attracted me to Christ. I was a pagan. I was a lost religious person, but I was as lost as could be. That's fine. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, whatever. I'll go to church on Sunday and do my little penance, and then I can live the way I want to the rest of the week and forget about all that stuff. And I can do whatever I want to, and I can tease my brothers and sisters and torment them and everything else and do unthinkable things to them and have them do. It's amazing. I remember the unthinkable things they did to me, but I don't remember anything that I did to them. That's something about the way a brat lives. Their memory is kind of fogged that way. Oh, I did some terrible things. And they did some, not sure they deserved every bit of it, right? And that's just the way, my dad did a good thing when we were kids. He bought a house, actually before he started family, he bought a house out in the country where there was no one around. Otherwise, I think we probably all would have ended up in jail. But we didn't know what it was to be kind. When some neighbors moved in, boy, we were the terror of the neighborhood. We would go down there and do things that, I didn't know what it was to be kind, but there were some kind people that attracted me to Christianity. And I look back, and we live in such a self-centered, self-righteous world today that Christian kindness is something that's almost a thing of the past. Pagan kindness is almost a thing. These barbarian people show no little kindness. Even they can teach us to be kind. Kind Christians attracted me to Christ. When I got saved, I learned to be kind. And I want to say this. That took a miracle. God's still in the miracle-working business. He saved me, and He taught me how to be kind to other people. I drive a school bus. And I was telling the kids that I drove a bus full of pagan kids the other day. And I was counting as they got off. Every one of them, as they got off the bus, "Thank you for driving me." In fact, a couple of them said, "Thank you so much for driving." I thought, I wasn't that bad, was I? "Thank you so much. We got here safely. We didn't think we were going to make it." It was almost like that. What happened? What did you see that I didn't see? But just that kindness. And I thought, wow, I couldn't help but to think, these barbarous people, these pagan people, those wicked people in the world. Sad to see, sometimes I see more kindness in the world than I see in God's people. Now, when I say this, I'm not looking at you. I'm looking at myself when I say this. Because I need to be reminded this constantly. It doesn't matter how I feel. It doesn't matter how people have hurt me. It doesn't matter what they've said to me or how they respond to me. I'm going to go out of my way to be kind to people. By the way, that's the way a Christian ought to think. Jesus did that, didn't he? He was falsely accused. He opened not his mouth. He didn't have to respond back. He didn't have to answer back. I had to learn to be kind. God's people need to learn to be kind. I got thinking, and I look at these kids, that some of the kids that came on the bus, and I feel bad sometimes because I have such a hard time remembering the names of some of these kids. And a couple of the boys I got to know a little bit this morning. They're in there working on one little boy had a tooth that was, you know, doing one of those numbers and had blood in his mouth and everything. And I got chatting with him a little bit. And I said, you know, I can help you out with that thing. He didn't, but we chatted for a while, we were joking for a while, and just showing some kindness and compassion. I really wasn't getting, I was showing him kindness and kidding with him. He knew I was kidding, but just that going out of your way to be kind to them. And I made a couple of friends this morning. I can't remember the name. I should have jotted their names down because I think you're going to have to help me with their names, junior church workers, and I think they were in your class, Rex and Sean. Sean's the one with the loose tooth. There were two other boys that were with him. I can't remember their names, but Sean, I do remember Sean was the one I was teasing about his tooth. But to show that kindness. You know, I've watched some kids when I was a young person. Again, I got to say, because there were some folks that you could tell there was something real about them. In fact, they were the kind that, they were so kind I would have teased them when I was a pagan. I would have made fun of them. What is wrong with those people? I mean, I'd just soon knock somebody in the head than show kindness to them. That's where I was. That's where a lot of folks are. Sad to say, some Christians are there. I'm grateful for that kindness that I didn't deserve that some Christian people showed me. And I'm grateful for some Christians that showed me by example how to be kind and generous, how to love other people. And it doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter what they do. I've learned some things, even some from some barbarians, even some from foreigners that know nothing about God. Christians ought to be a kind people. We ought to be a loving people. In 1 Corinthians chapter number 13, you know the verses. You probably know the chapter. I'm going to make sure I get it right. I'm looking at it a little bit. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and knowledge and have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. By the way, look at all the things that I could have and still not love people like I should. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. Now then charity is defined. Not charity back there. It's good to see you tonight, Charity. I couldn't resist. And a lot of people put the word love in there, but I like the word charity. I think God left that word charity in our Bible for our generation. Because the word love has been so cheapened, we don't know what that we just kind of read over that. But we talk so much about love, it's kind of like folks talk so much about worship, they don't know what it means. And we talk so much about love, we don't know what it means. And charity is showing compassion on people, whether they deserve it or not. And then he defines charity. Charity suffereth long and is what? Kind. It suffereth long. It's patient. It doesn't matter what you've done. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to suffer long. I'll take the wrong. Go ahead and blame me if you want to. And I will be kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself. Is not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemly. Seeketh not her own. Is not easily provoked. Thinketh no evil. Rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things. Believeth all things. Hopeth all things. Endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Charity is eternal. And charity, one of the first ingredients of charity is kindness. Be ye kind one to another. These barbarous people, these heathen, pagan people, showed us no little kindness. They cared for us. They took care of us. And what a difference. It's amazing how kindness is repaid in like. You know, when Brother Houston was here, he loves Chicago as much as I do. I said, I go there a couple of times a year, whether I need to or not. He said that he just can't, and we're kind of joking about it. Whenever I go to a big city like that, I have a goal to see how long it takes somebody to say hello back to me. It usually takes about a half hour of constant, hello, good morning, how are you? And they they grab their wallet and walk as fast as they can when you talk to them like that. But that's just right. I want to see how long it takes. And then finally, when somebody does say it, they say, you're not from around here, are you? How could you tell? But we live in a world today that's just what it's like. I can't live in that kind of a world. I'm just grateful for folks that have been kind to me when I was undeserving of their kindness. And I think back when I was first saved and going to church, and sure, there were some folks that were just rude and crude and had to talk about everybody else and get, you know, try to push buttons and everything else, but I'm grateful for friends that I made that were kind to me. As a teenager that had no support at home, I was telling the kids that a lot of kids grew up in church, they have they can't comprehend this. I understand that. I was telling you guys today that when I grew up, my dad, because his dad was a drinker and a drunk, he would not allow any alcohol in our home. He would not allow anybody to smoke a cigarette in our home. We had some relatives that would come over, and they would have said they always went outside, no questions asked. They just went outside, and none of that's allowed in our home. Now, that's kind of a popular thing now, but back then that was an unusual thing when you could smoke on airplanes and everything else back then. That was just the way things were. When I got saved as a teenager, my dad basically said, I would rather see you out smoking and drinking and carrying on than to be going to that church. And he gave when I went off to Bible college, they said, don't bother ever coming home, as far as we're concerned. And my little sister that I just led to the Lord called me. And in those days, calling somebody was a big thing. She had to borrow somebody's phone and then call. Couldn't call collect because that's the only way we could make long distance calls back then. We're illiterate, so we couldn't write to each other. She called and said, Dad said, you go to that church tonight, you're not coming back home. Well, she went to church and got home, and I didn't even know it was possible to lock the doors on our house. When we grew up, we never locked the doors, but somehow they found a way to lock the doors. And the bags of her clothes were sitting out on the step when she got home at night. Where are you going to go? I don't know. I'm grateful for Christians that showed kindness. And what I'm saying is, some of these kids that come on the bus, you have no idea, kids, what their life is like. You couldn't even imagine it if you tried to imagine it. And the only place they're ever going to see Christian love and kindness is in you. That's why we emphasize that this week. I thought, well, this would be a good time to talk about that with everybody tonight. These barbarian people showed us no little kindness. I read about people that get involved in gangs. And overwhelmingly, the reason people get involved in gangs is because they don't feel like they belong anywhere. But somebody showed them some kindness, and it was a gang member. Somebody showed them some love, and that's what sucked them into the gang. We as God's people, of all people, ought to be the kindest, the most gentle, the most caring people there are. Never harsh, angry. I've had, since I've been a preacher, I've had folks talk to me, the church people talk to me like, to be quite honest, when God saved me and I got right with God, I'd be afraid God would strike me dead if I ever thought that way about my preacher, let alone talk to him that way. Visiting folks at church people, by the way, none of them are here, okay, so I'm not talking about, well, maybe I'm talking about, I don't know. Go to the house and you hear the banging and screaming and yelling and cussing and everything going on. Hey, Deacon so-and-so, having a good conversation with your teenage daughter, aren't you? Oh, yeah, we're just reading and praying the praying and reading the Bible here. I don't remember those verses in the Bible, but the facade that we sometimes try to put on and try to cover, and you see it. God's people ought not to be that way. We ought to be the most kind, caring, compassionate people to attract people to the gospel. I'm concerned about young people that come to our church, and I know all the influence and all the things that they get, but I tell you, the thing that'll keep them is just showing kindness and love to them. If anything will keep them, that's the only thing that will. Well, you ought to do this. You need to do this. Oh, they ain't going to do it. When you got a family that's constantly trying to get you to do things that they used to be against, but now they'd rather see you do those things than to go to church. And it's called conviction. And then we come to church and see folks being kind and harsh. I'm grateful for the friends that I had that showed me how to be kind, that taught me how to love. And sometimes even barbarian people that know nothing about our God, foreigners to God and His Word, we can learn so much from them. A miracle of kindness. It will go so far. I don't know where to end this. We're just going to end it right there. Let's stand to our